Okay, welcome back. Can I hear it?
Thank you.
We're listening to an outgoing message.
At the tone.
Oh, here we go.
Record your message.
Maybe we just do the whole show. You know, remember that time I did that with my Uncle Sid?
Press 1 for more options.
Les really liked that. Hey, Joel, Mark Schneidman, Radio Real Estate. It's 1117. You can call us toll-free at 866-564-1290, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks. Bye. So I called my Uncle Sid, and I got his voicemail, and I don't remember what the message was. We were talking about, maybe it was because we replayed him being the oldest homeless man in Santa Barbara. Oh, no, it was something to do with Memorial Day. In fact, we might have played it last week.
Yes.
Wow. See, I should listen to my own show. Okay, now, while we're waiting for Joel to call in, and this guy predicts things. He's Richard joked that he was a psychic when I said he was a futurist, but he did not predict not being there for the phone call. Okay, you all know about short sales. Short sales, people, 60 Minutes did this long run on short sales, and actually it was more of a deferred indifference, where they just said goodbye to their home, but they stayed there. And at first, you know, you certainly feel sorry for people who are can't make their payments. It's upside down. The loan reset, the problems. Certainly, you feel sorry for people. But these were people who had the money and just elected to stop making payments. Now, even if you want to go as far as say, okay, well, house is upside down. But the rub was that they stayed in the house and just ground out the bank until they were basically hauled away, and they just stayed there for free. That was the rub. That's what kind of rubbed me the wrong way. So the short sale is different. That's where you're in touch with the bank. Hopefully you're making payments, or if you're not making payments, you're just somehow connected. You put it on the market. You either vacate the house or you just try to get it sold right away. That's a whole different story. But it's cost a lot of money. So this was something I didn't know about. Came out in the California Real Estate Magazine in May of 2011. That references a $5,000 moving expense after a short sale. And it's called the TAP, Transition Assistant Program. Kind of like Tapped Out. And it's one of several Keep Your Home California, KYHC. God, I feel like chicken when I say that. KFC. Federally funded programs intended to provide eligible homeowners with transition assistance when they can't afford staying in their homes. So is this fair? Is this right? Total of $32 million has been allocated for this program. TAP, Transition Assistance Program, is available after a short sale or in deed in lieu. Deed in lieu of foreclosure. That's instead of the short sale where you sell the house, the bank accepts less than they're owed, and everyone walks away. The bank, obviously is upside down. They don't get the full amount of their loan. You walk away. But it's not, they don't have to go through the expense of foreclosure. And maybe the house isn't vacant. Maybe, like this one I sold earlier this year, the owners, even though they weren't making payments, they were paying the gardener. They kept the house up. It's good for the neighborhood. So instead of a short sale, it's called deed in lieu of foreclosure. And instead of foreclosing, they just hand over the deed. Sometimes there's a clause in there called cash for keys. You've probably heard that term. So in apparently both of these cases, short sale or a deed in lieu of foreclosure, TAP funds are available on a one-time basis. Why do they have to make it TAP? I mean, it's just the innuendo is just too ridiculous. On a one-time basis of up to $5,000 per household, and can be used with other Keep Your Home California programs. The funds are intended to help the low to moderate income owner. So thankfully, they're not going to do that for someone who's making $300,000 a year. Intended for low to moderate income owners, movie expenses, cost, security deposit. Money doesn't go directly to the homeowner. All the funds are sent to the loan servicer, subject to the servicer approval of the short sale or deed in lieu of foreclosure. Wow. I wonder if, the follow-up to this is, how many of these programs and dollars actually, went out and worked? That's what they always kind of get in trouble. The magazine is just filled with great thoughts and information. Here's a story, and you know, we all get kind of frustrated about lawsuits, and certainly there's the vast majority are legitimate, but you always hear the stories about, you know, God, you know, it wasn't that frivolous. So here's a story of a real estate related frivolous lawsuit entitled Photo Copyright Appeal Leads to Fine. So this is a story about, now we have this in Santa Barbara, and there's some classy guys locally that make up some really nice brochures, and they shoot photos. And this is a story about a property photographer who lost a copyright infringement case against a multiple listing service in a particular town. Then they filed an appeal, and they were penalized, or is it by the appellate court, on the grounds that her appeal was frivolous. I don't know how often that happens, where someone, not only do you lose, but they say, you know what, you lose so badly, you shouldn't even been here in the first place, and you're going to get fined. This occurred in the Fort Lauderdale area in Florida. Now, on its face, you'd say, hey, if you're a photographer, you take photos, you have a right to those photos. Absolutely. The photographer had entered into a non-exclusive agreement with a real estate salesperson to take photos of a listing. So that tells me that the real estate agent didn't have exclusivity to the photos, but I'm not an attorney. The pictures were used in the multiple listing and marketing material, and the property was sold. A few years later, the new owner of the home, who had nothing to do with the guy who hired the photographer, worked with a sales team affiliated with still another brokerage, so no relation. They decided to sell the house. The sales team had access to the photos through the MLS and used those images in connection with the listing. You know, that happens. In fact, I remember hearing about it locally, where someone had taken a lot of time to take a lot of photos, and then they might have lost the listing, which is kind of always sad. And I think they were lamenting that the new agent grabbed the photos from the old listing. Different story. I don't know how that computes with this story, but when in this case, the photographer sent notice to the new sales team and the multiple listing service, also known as MLS, stating they didn't have permission to use the photos. So far, so good. The sales team and the MLS, the multiple listing service, immediately removed the photos the following day. Now, notwithstanding that effort to correct the matter, the photographer filed a lawsuit against the MLS and the sales team alleging copyright infringement. Now, you know, if you notify someone and they don't argue with you and they take it down in one day, it's not as if you found out about it 4 months later and the house sold for a gazillion dollars and you say that, hey, you know, that my photos help sell your house. The next day, first day on the market, this photographer files a lawsuit alleging copyright infringement. She later dismissed the sales team from the suit, so she was just suing the multiple listing service. Interesting. The multiple listing service filed a motion seeking judgment in its favor, and the trial court agreed, awarding the attorney's fees to the MLS. The photographer was not happy and appealed the award. Then it went to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit, and they affirmed the trial court ruling and imposed sanctions on the photographer for filing a meritless appeal. That is getting spanked. The court said that the trial court, in awarding the attorney's fees to the MLS, that was the first go-round, was acting within its authority. And because the trial court intended to deter copyright holders from filing lawsuits without first trying to resolve the dispute out of court, which would happen in the photographer's case, they could have tried to resolve it. She just filed a lawsuit. Now, as an aside, this brings to mind what happens every time you write a purchase contract and you list a house here, at least in Southern California, at least in Santa Barbara, is you have a paragraph and the option to check the mediation/arbitration agreement in advance. Now, maybe when this photographer took the photos and they had some contract, maybe with the, you know, they had an invoice or something, maybe they should have had an addendum saying, hey, if there's ever a dispute, we go to mediation arbitration. Of course, the problem with that is it wouldn't have mattered because it was a new sales team. And so that forget that point. But the point that you can take away is if you're entering into some kind of contract with somebody, most contracts in the commodities or stocks agreements, there's appearing more and more the arbitration mediation clause, optional in the purchase agreement here in California. But I would say it's almost always signed and initialed. You initial the paragraph, it incorporates it into the agreement. And what it says, and what this court was saying, is that they thought that this photographer should have tried to resolve it first, even though there was no binding paragraph to say, hey, let's try to mediate this first, and then if mediation fails, let's go to an arbitrator to avoid going to court. They slapped her down because they said this was so trivial, she should have at least tried to discuss it first, just the next day filing this lawsuit. The court, and finally, the court also agreed with the MLS that the photographer be sanctioned for filing a frivolous suit and sent the case back to trial court to determine the appropriate fine. So, to me, I think that's a great story, and it's a lesson about arbitration mediation, and keep it in mind. I'm not saying that every time you write a purchase contract, you should initial that. It seems that it's become just standard. I don't know if it'll ever just be in the contract. There must be some legal reason why they have it as a separate option to initial. We'll have to get an attorney on from the California Association of Realtors to ask him why it has to be that way. Because I think it comes down to trying to remember off the top. That might be, there's two paragraphs that have to be initialed. One is the mediation arbitration, and the other one is called liquidated damages, and it has to do with the disposition of your deposit and how that would be handled. So they're trying to, in advance, avoid the potholes and the pitfalls and just try to make things be resolved easier, because you start talking about the disposition of the deposit and you know, a buyer. I met somebody who's going to list his house, and you just ask that question. Oh, so if this happens, I get the deposit back, right? Or do I get to keep the deposit? And, you know, you could just spend an hour discussing all the nuances of, well, this could happen and this could happen. The bottom line is both buyer and seller need to sign the release of funds for a buyer to get their deposit back. More times than not, the seller is just absolutely more than willing to get the deposit back so he can put it back on the market and go on to sell the property. However... in fact, I don't know if I have this in my stack in front of me, but there was a great story about like a $10 or $15 million property that went into escrow. The buyer canceled. The seller thought the buyer canceled for was not a justifiable reason and ended up fighting to keep the deposit, even though the seller immediately sold the house to another buyer for more money. So I'm sorry to leave you hanging on that one. I don't remember how it was resolved. You would think, based on this Florida story, that they would have spanked the seller and said, come on, what's the justification here? There was no damages. Oh, that was it. They didn't sign the liquidated damages in the contract. They kind of created their own version of liquidated damages. I still can't remember the punchline. And it was unbelievable. I thought it was actually rather upside down. And they were punishing the buyer because they didn't use the clause, even though the clause they used was essentially the same thing. Anyway, if you're a photographer and you take pictures, please don't sue the MLS, and otherwise you'll get spanked. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, RadioRealEstate.com, RadioRealEstate.com. The phone number is 452-2428, 452-CHAT. If you'd like to call in and discuss Joel Kotkin's new book, because we can't get a hold of Joel yet. or if you have a story about how you lost your deposit or fought for your deposit. We have more real estate stories. We have a lot more to come. We have Motoring with Mark. I'm going to tell you about some great properties I saw in the last couple of weeks on Caravan. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.